Thank you for listening to On the Lift Podcast, a Runaway Dumpster production. Live from Greenwater Studios, this is On the Lift Podcast, your weekly show that is ultimately about skiing. This is the show that ducks the rope, earns some turns, dances in ski boots, poaches hot tubs, closes the bar, and still makes it on the first chair. Here's your hosts, two dudes who rip the pow, shred the gnar, and tell the tales, Lance Hester and Michael Gore.
This is only our second episode. If you missed our intro episode, you need to know one thing, and that's our phone number. It's 253-260-4577. The reason we want you to know that phone number is we want this to be an interactive podcast. We want to know your thoughts on the subjects we should be covering, the people we should be interviewing, and the ski areas that we should be featuring. So give us a call. Again, it's 253-260-4577. Before we get into the great subject matter of this first full-length podcast, just know this. We're a podcast that's about what we'd like to say is all things skiing. We want to cover ski culture. We want to cover all the different ski areas that are out there, big and small. We don't have some sort of insider industry background in the ski world. We're not former Olympic racers or anything like that. We're ski enthusiasts, and we're hoping that that's what you are too. So join us every week on theliftpodcast.com is where you'll find us. Again, let me tell you that phone number. It's 253-260-4577. Leave us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks. You think our podcast would be a good fit for promoting your business? Get a hold of us through our website at ontheliftpodcast.com. Mike, for our first full episode of On the Lift Podcast, it's really kind of fun to look forward to the season ahead of us by looking at all the different passes that are available.
That's something that's come to be in the past couple of years here, where these resorts are getting together and offering kind of what we'll call a super pass, where you're not just buying a pass at one resort, but you're buying maybe a few days at a lot of different resorts. It gives you some options. So, how do we sort through these all?
Yeah, and if you listeners are looking for the answer for which of the passes to buy, well, you're not really going to be able to get that. We're going to cover all the biggies today. And the reason we're not going to give you the answer is it really depends on where you live and, whether you're planning on skiing a number of resorts or just like a place.
So we did a little bit of high-level research on what passes are out there.
And we mean high-level.
Very high-level, 30,000 foot.
We cracked open a couple magazines.
So the Epic Pass is the first of these, and I'm just going to kind of list all of them. There's the Epic Pass, there's the Icon Pass, the Mountain Collective Pass, and I think then the Max Pass and the Powder Alliance. So those are sort of the big four or five national passes that are out there in terms of the super passes.
Gotcha. And then because of these things, it seems like many of the local mountains or individual mountains are making their passes a little more attractive by offering if you buy them really early in the season or early preseason or the season before, then you're going to get some screaming good deals. And I think they're trying to compete with some of these national passes that you mentioned. And I think you were telling me too that some of the research you learned, Michael, brought the local pass into the big national passes.
Yeah, so it's no longer an issue where you've got to buy your pass at your home mountain and you're stuck there. So for example, if you got the Epic Pass and if you got it before April 15th, you'd actually get six buddy tickets, so six free tickets. The price stays the same, though, of about $900. And most of these passes for an adult, right around
they're hitting $1,000 mark,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, $900 to $1,000, okay. Which is kind of comparable to what you see most of the big-name resort, single resort passes are as well. So you're looking at about $1,000. Okay. But, for example, let me just walk through the Epic Pass right now.
Yeah, well, and let's walk through each of them. And let's also, because we don't want to alienate our local mountains, because they, I know, have reasons for their pricing. Let's keep in mind that that will also be revisiting the fact that those places are often offering some screaming good deals. And not just that they're often screaming good deals preseason, but if you were to have bought those early enough, you could have finished your season skiing on them. So something to think about for next year.
Exactly. You know, you got to act early to get the best deals on these. So let's look at the Epic Pass. That gets you unlimited access to Whistler Blackcomb, Park City, Kirkwood, Heavenly North Star, Vail, Beaver Creek, Keystone, Breckenridge, A-Basin, Crested Butte, Mount Brighton, Afton Alps, Stowe, Wilmot, Mount Sunapee, Okemo, Stevens Pass, and Perisher. Then you get 7 days at Telluride, 7 days at Fernie, Kimberley Alpine, Stoneham, Kicking Horse, and Mount St. Anne. And then, look, you've got like a bunch of resorts around the world, Japan.
And this is all Epic Pass.
This is all Epic Pass. So the Epic Pass really, it's amazing how many mountains it really encompasses for that amount of money.
Yeah, it really is. And when you were saying the number of days, so basically if you didn't specify how many days, the rest of them were unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live near one of those resorts, that's kind of a no-brainer if you got the dough.
It really is. And, you know, if you're a Colorado person, some of these are going to, like the Epic versus the Mountain Collective or the Icon, you know, it's going
to
have Steamboat or versus Crested Butte. I mean, yeah, you kind of have to do the math locally, but there's lots of resources online, and we'll post links on our website.
So, like, one of those that you mentioned was A-Basin. I don't know how much their lift tickets are, but for $1,000, you're only going to have to put in 10 or 12 days, even if they're, like, you know, even if that early or late season pricing to pay for that. So that seems like a really good deal for people who live near those resorts.
Yeah, it doesn't take long for these things to pencil out. And, you know, the great thing about these, like we said before, is then you're not stuck feeling like you got to get 10 days at your local mountain and you can't travel. I mean, all those resorts, yeah, I just listed with the Icon Pass, that really gives you, you know, a lot of flexibility.
It sure sounds like it. Well, let's hear about the others. And I think a rule of thumb to keep in mind is, in the old days, if you bought a season pass at your local mountain, you typically had to get in 20 days for it to pay for itself. That's actually a lot of skiing, especially for us weekend warriors who, you know, have day jobs.
Right. That is a fair bit of skiing. And, you know, it's nice when you have the season pass, though, because you can just head up to the hill for a couple turns and not feel like you're, you know, over-invested in it.
That's true.
But still, it's also, if the season isn't ideal, you know, you're sitting on a major cash outlay at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. All right. What other passes do we have?
We got the Mountain Collective, which is 32 days across 16 resorts. So you're looking at Big Sky, Alta, Aspen, Jackson Hole, Mammoth, Snow Basin, Snowbird, Squaw Valley, Alpine Meadows, Sugarbush, Sun Valley, Taos, Banff, Lake Louise, Revelstoke. So, you know, lots of great names in there. You're looking at $409 for that.
So that's the one I have. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll just tell you that you just got to do the math and determine whether it's a no brainer for you or not. And that's how this one worked out. I know, for instance, that, so I was able to buy it early season. And if you buy it early season, you get a bonus day at one of the mountains. And so I chose Sun Valley because I know that, well, I've booked a trip where I'm going to be in Sun Valley this year for more than 3 days. So I'll be able to ski there, and there's no blackouts. I'll be able to ski all three of those days. And at over $150, you know, per lift ticket, it comes real close to the, actually it makes sense. It's a no brainer right there economically for my situation, a few bucks cheaper than buying three lift tickets. But then what you'll learn is that if you go more than 2 days at most resorts or 3 days at your bonus resort, your tickets are half price.
So that right there, if you're talking about a $150 ticket, $75 off per day, that's a lot of hot chocolate.
that is a lot of hot chocolate, Michael. A lot of cookies too. All right. So and those resorts, you know, the other thing about it is, if you have one, I've been wanting to go to Jackson Hole my whole life. I've only been there in the summer. That doesn't do a skier much good, right? But now that I have the Mountain Collective Pass, I know that I can ski two full days at Jackson Hole. Well, maybe I'll be more likely to round you or some other guys up to hop on a plane and get to Jackson and put in a long weekend or something.
Yeah, and you've got places like Big Sky and Alta on there as well. You know,
Salt Lake City
is a really accessible airport to get to, especially here from Seattle.
Yeah, direct flights from Seattle.
Right.
AlaskaAir.com. They'd be a great sponsor for our show.
You know, they would. They help you get around the Northwest.
But they're not, so we're not going to keep talking about them until they step up to the plate.
That's right.
All right, so we've covered two of them.
Let's look at the Max Pass. So this is 5 days each at 44 mountains across North America. So
you'd want to go to our website and check out that list.
Yeah.
And, that's a lot of skiing. I mean, most people, I don't think, ski 5 days a year.
That's true. These are some of the smaller hills, although the exception is you've got Crested Butte in here, Kicking Horse.
And how much
Kimberly,
is the Max
Fernie.
Pass?
That one is, I don't see a price on
this
one. It's all TBA at this point.
Okay. Well, it must be a new one because I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. And then Powder Alliance as well looks like they've got 19 resorts. You get 3 free days at all the rest of them. So
it's a lot like the Mountain Collective, it sounds like.
Yep.
Different lineup of hills. Okay. Well, that's a good overview of all those, Mike. So we had the Icon, the Epic, Mountain Collective, Powder
Alliance, and the Max.
And the Max, M-A-X. Now, it's easy for us left coasters to overlook the right coasters, the people on the East Coast, which I'm sure are the vast majority of skiers in this country. Interestingly, a lot of those passes seem to be clustered around Colorado resorts and Utah resorts, but there's tons of skiing listed there for the East Coast as well.
Yeah, there is. I mean, the list of resorts that these cover is quite extensive, and you know, there's a lot of names on there that I don't recognize being out here in the West, but I'm sure are great mountains, as well as some of the bigger ones that you've heard about. So, you know, all in all, it's a great way to really minimize the expense of skiing, especially if you're going to be moving around a little bit during the ski season, taking a few trips, and you know, maybe you want to check out somewhere on the East Coast. Maybe for some reason you're heading out east and
you got business back there.
You
need a little trivia, on the lift podcast trivia. Mike, what state has the most ski areas? We could be doing the Jeopardy song, but everyone does that when they're pausing.
I'm gonna go. Well, I can bet it's not in the West, since.
Well, what would most people say? Because you know it's a trick question if it's not what most people say. Most people would say.
I'd say Vermont.
Oh well, that's not what most people would say. Most people, I think, would say Colorado.
Well, yeah, of course.
But the answer is New York State, 56 ski areas. I think a bunch of them are private, but like little, you know, clubs with a rope tow or.
That was pretty impressive. You just pulled that out of your trivia knowledge.
You know, there's some things, Mike.
I can attest to the fact he has no notes in front of him. That
that's how I roll, baby.
Yeah.
The final comment that I'll have to say on those passes is, if you have a child for at least some, I think the Mountain Collective and maybe some of the others, if you're going to go on a vacation and you know you're going to go to one of those resorts that's listed, and a great example would be the Mountain Collective. If you have a child under a certain age, I think it's the age of 12, you get a pass for them for $1. So suddenly, if you know that that little rugrat's going to want to ski, but doggone it, you know, it's too cold before 10 a.m., and he's going to want an hour-long hot chocolate break, and you're sitting there going, oh, but $95 for that kid, is that really worth it? You know, once you get to the mountain, money, I guess, shouldn't matter, but this really takes the sting out of that whole, you know, dilemma on whether it's worth it to take him out to the mountain for one more day or the next day or the next day, because, you know, his whole pass is only a buck. It basically cuts your pass down to, you know, nothing if you're going to take your kid out skiing anyways.
Yeah, that's a tremendous benefit to these things. So
it's a good lead in for our next show topic, which is going to be vacation planning, or one of our next show topics.
Right. Where are you going to go? Where are you going to ski, and how are you going to make it all happen?
Well, and I guess our final comment should be, don't overlook your local hill. I mean, you told me an example about, was it Big Sky, Michael, where you buy a season pass there and it includes one of these national passes.
That's a great point, because, you know, you could be getting a pass at your local hill that is just part of this, you know, network of other resorts. You're getting a lot more bang for the buck than you used to out of just getting a season's pass. For example, you know, Sun Valley, you're looking at $1,900 for a season's pass there for an unlimited, you know, that's full freight, full meal deal.
It's some real money, baby.
It is, but, you know, Sun Valley is part of the Mountain Collective, and you do get to participate in that as well.
Oh, so, just by buying their season pass?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a $450 bonus.
Yeah, so, but just looking at, you know, if you're a Colorado skier, looking at what kind of the rates are for season passes there, you know, Crested Butte, you know, for an adult pass that what they call the Peak Pass Plus.
Means you can go whenever you want.
Yeah, you can go whenever you want. You know, if you get that by early April, you're looking at $859.
A lot of money, but a reasonable price since you're buying it pre-season.
Right. Some of the like smaller resorts, but also I've been to Bryan Head. That's an awesome mountain.
Oh, Utah resort. Yeah.
Yeah. You're looking at about $529.
Well, so. And if you're shopping for a local pass for, you know, some of these places are aware of who's coming up and when. You may be, if you're, you know, someone who doesn't have weekends available but has weekdays off, you know, maybe you work retail or maybe you're a firefighter or someone who's got a schedule with a lot of different weekdays, you can get like a weekday only pass at some places, and it's a fraction of the price of a full pass that includes weekends.
That'll save you about, you know, just from flipping through these, about 40%.
Now, what I get a little annoyed at is some of these places, some of these big resorts have these, like, too many pass options. One where you get 10 days early season, 10 days late season, and, you know, you got to wonder, oh, what if it doesn't start by the end of late season? Well, you don't get a ski on those days, you know? So, like, they'll call them the 10-10-10 pass, 10 days early, 10 middle, 10 late. That's a lot of skiing, but they're not offering it because they're losing money on it.
No, it gets people up to the hill, and, you know, more than ever, it just provides lots of options for, you know, making skiing a little bit more affordable, which is one of the things we're trying to help our audience do.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I just value the depth of research you've done on these passes, and I think it's going to be great for our listeners when we put it on our website. It's basically some links to some people who have also done some research on these things, and they're really easy to follow. So go to ontheliftpodcast.com, and we will have the links, and, you know, right with our show notes, which are scant. We don't put detailed show notes on.
Yeah. Also, if you guys are following us on Twitter, tweet us some ideas for topics, or you know, if you guys have had some experience with some of these passes and can recommend one over another, you know, kind of from a regional perspective, if you're in the Salt Lake City area or the Denver area or the Seattle market.
And what's that Twitter handle, Michael?
It is @lift_on.
@LiftOn.
Yep. So if you go to Twitter and you just search for On the Lift Podcast, you'll find us there as well.
And you can also find us on Facebook. And as we've mentioned, our webpage, which we're quite proud of. And you can listen to all of our shows there and subscribe to us.
That's right. And tell a friend. I mean, we're really trying to grow this and get to a point where we're providing even more insight to a larger audience and making this an interactive experience for skiers across the country. So
that's right. And because we're new, I think I'll repeat that we have an intro show that you can pick up on our archives on our webpage. But this show seeks to appeal to the common skier. We're not out here to pretend like we're some sort of elites or insiders. We're here to talk to the millions of people who have a passion for skiing and are enthusiasts about this, and they want their families and friends to be part of their skiing culture with them.
The On the Lift Podcast is brought to you in part by Radio Parties. Nobody knows how to party any hardier than Shushin' boomers like you, right? So if you're planning a preseason party, a mid-season party, a postseason party, a birthday party, holiday party, company party, a just-because party, well, you get the idea. We have the perfect party music choice. It's our traveling, high-energy, fun-loving DJs. They have a great way of making any party huge. Call Radio Parties, 800-954-3535. 800-954-DJ-DJ, or email me directly at ric@radioparties.com.
We really mean it when we say give us a call with your great ideas for our show. Tell us who you are, where you're from, maybe tell us where you ski normally, and tell us some great show ideas. And if you want to drop us a quote that we might play on the On the Lift Podcast, do that too. It's simple. Just pick up the phone and call us. It's 253-260-4577.
Welcome back to On the Lift Podcast.
Well, Michael, we've promised that our podcast is going to include some fun stuff, some interesting stuff, and just some conversations on each of our episodes. We've covered the passes, of course, on this one. You know, we're already getting questions about our corporate parent name. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what we really wanted to capture was just the spirit of the Runaway Dumpster.
And that is our corporate name, Runaway Dumpster LLC.
Yes, and it comes from a good friend of ours who, you know, long story short, his skiing style probably closest resembles a runaway dumpster.
It resembles that of a runaway dumpster, Michael. You couldn't have called it more closely.
I think we would categorize him as an extreme intermediate.
Yeah, I recently took a lesson in a different sport, and when the instructor commented, "Lance, you're almost an intermediate," I wasn't sure how to take that.
Well, at least, you know, there's few sports, though, skiing, where you can have the combination of speed, confidence, but maybe not the competence yet. So,
well,
you know, the runaway dumpster look is, if you can visualize it, I heard somebody describe their skiing as that one time, and it just stuck with me that is the...
Don't admit that, because we're going to copyright that name. Well, Michael, the runaway dumpster, the fascination I have with, when I say the runaway dumpster, that's with a capital T, capital R, capital, that's all D, right? The TRD.
Yeah.
This fellow, it's not like he's only been skiing a year or two.
No, but the mass and the momentum is still very dumpster-like. And
But you're making him sound fat. He's not a fat guy.
Not at all. And
it's all about the style.
We're saying this in a very...
An empty runaway dumpster.
We're saying this in a very endearing way.
So if you're skiing and your arms are kind of up and you might have the best skis in the world, and you might... If you were using them close to right, you'd be carving a turn or making it look effortless.
Yes, and I think where the runaway dumpster part comes in is when your direction of travel is in conflict with the direction of your upper body.
So it's all about gravity.
It is, because if you picture a dumpster going downhill at a high rate of speed, at a building rate of speed, it's going to be slightly off axis.
So this guy's a little... it's not fair to call him a train wreck. That's why we're calling him a runaway dumpster.
No, of course not. A train wreck is implies finality and
disaster.
Yeah,
the dude's not a disaster. We love him on one hand, but we ski with him despite the dumpster vernacular.
The runaway dumpster will continue to move until it's acted upon by an equal and opposing force,
like
a tree.
A tree,
like
that
a tree that
impales.
Maybe, well, there was a violation one time, and were you a witness to the violation?
Well, I was the first arrival to the violation. Red Mountain 2005.
No, that was the epic powder day at Red Mountain that we'll get into in a later episode. Yes. Because it deserves its own treatment.
It does. It's got so many things to talk about.
Oh, everything from the AC/DC cover band to the black vinyl booths and greyhounds at that lounge.
And the midnight sledding.
The midnight sledding. Seeing,
we'll cover it all. Yeah, that was amazing. It's just a great place to go. But the dumpster was ahead of me. Dumpster, we had a powder day, and it was kind of turned into a crud day, which meant what do you look for after the main runs are skied out on a powder day? You look for?
More powder.
Which you find underneath the
trees.
Trees. And so this guy at the time wasn't maybe the right fit for dense snow tree skiing. Yeah. Excuse me. And tell me what you remember him sharing about the experience, Michael.
Well, as I recall it, you know, we were all back at that house there that we had rented.
Angela's
house. And we were kind of recapping from our day. And I remember he had a very serious look on his face. Like, whatever had happened was not, like, funny. It was, Michael, I was violated today.
Michael, I got to say that I've never seen someone need the services of a heavy-duty sewing machine on the mountain.
So let's talk a little bit about the Runaway Dumpster's attire, right? He rolls in, was it Mountain Hardware?
Oh, yeah. He was wearing the top-notch stuff at the time.
So Mountain Hardware is not known for being flimsy material. It's made out of, like, super heavy-duty Cordura nylon, right? Especially in the seat.
Yes.
And so we get back to the cabin, and I'll let you fill
in. I think there's two layers on the seat in those pants.
Well, yeah, plus a base layer. So I'll let you, you know, talk about exactly what happened. But when I came on, you know, into the story, we're all having beer back at the house, and he's like, Michael, I was impaled. I was violated. And he holds up his Mountain Hardware bibs that are, again, not unsubstantial.
They're substantial.
They are substantial. There was a definite perforation in the pants. There was, you know,
not on the seam.
No. So what? Apparently, the broken off end of the top of the Christmas tree
somehow he got ahead of me, Michael, and I think it might have had to do with his speed was not like something he was controlling. It was more an act of gravity.
Okay.
And when I caught him, he was kind of a little bit left, and there was this, I think you called it Charlie Brown Christmas tree, you know, not much left to it, to the right, and it was broken. The tree was broken. And we've all stumbled upon someone who looked like maybe they should be going through concussion protocol or something like that. He looked like pain. There was pain in his face, Michael.
Like something wasn't right.
Something wasn't right.
Yeah.
Between his facial expression and the broken Charlie Brown tree, something just wasn't right, but he was standing up.
Yeah, I remember feeling bad for his future wife, because he's going to eventually look at her and be like, you don't want me anymore. I'm no good anymore.
There was one of his poles was he had poked in the ground.
Not now. After what's happened.
His pole, as I came up on the scene, was poked into the ground. He was holding the other one in his other hand. And his arm that normally would have been holding onto this pole was feeling around behind him. And
yeah.
Michael, he then said to me, he asked me, he said, Lance, will you check to see if there's a hole in my pants? I'm a helpful guy, so of course I did, Michael. And I think you saw that same hole when you brought it out for display.
I saw that because I was skiing a different group with you guys. And when we got back, I saw the, you know, at first it's like, there's nothing more boring than a, hey, I fell in the woods ski story.
Yeah.
I think we all know that.
No, they're terrible.
They are. They really are. Everyone's got one.
I had a yard sale. I couldn't find my watch. I don't know, whatever.
And then I fell off this cliff and it was a sheer drop. No.
Or can you believe I had my pocket unzipped that whole time and I still have my wallet?
This had a proof source. This had some evidence. This had exhibit A, which were the Mountain Hardware pants that were clearly perforated through the Cordura, through the very bulletproof nylon, and I the look on his face was
stop and take a picture look on his face. It was a dehumanized look. It wasn't a laughable topic at the time, Michael.
No, it wasn't funny. I mean, we're laughing about it now, but it really was one of those, you know, your thoughts and prayers. That's the only thing you can give someone at that time. You just, words fail.
There's no question. He was feeling around for blood.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was on his face. Like,
yeah.
How bad is this impalement? How bad is this thing that just went through my pants and at least to some extent violated me, Michael.
And am I going to be in Canada in a small town that's gloriously stuck in the 80s and seeing how their healthcare system can triage and treat, you know, what could very likely be?
Well, at least it would have been free.
Well, it was probably, there was a bit of perforation. And, you know, I think we're mature enough to be clinical about this, but I think the perforation was probably limited to the posterior gluteal rectal region.
I let him do the check-in.
I remember he came out of the bathroom and he's like, there is blood. Remember when he comes out, he's like,
holding his pants.
Michael, here's the pants. Here's the blood.
Oh, that's just the start of the Runaway Dumpster stories. and we're going to consider whether we're actually going to go with using his real name. Hey, Mike, we have finished the full length of your average person's commute for this episode.
And you know what? Probably a really slow double chairlift ride as well. So thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of On the Lift. For Lance Hester, this is Michael Gore, signing off.
Well, it's time to offload the final chair and end this episode of On the Lift podcast. Bar up, tips up, sweep that hill, and see you next week.